and we'll move to the next case. It's U.S. versus Martinez.
May it please the court. My name is Mary Meehan, and I represent Eric Martinez, appellant. Counsel. In August of 2010, Eric Martinez pled guilty to two counts, count 1 and 12 of the indictment, conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute controlled substance and knowingly and intentionally distributing controlled substance. He was sentenced and received a base offense of 36, given the amount of crack cocaine. Two levels were added for a handgun possession, plus two levels for obstruction of justice and failure to appear. He was put into a Category 2 criminal history, and because of two prior sentences on a driving on a suspended, that ultimately put him into a sentencing guideline range of 262 months to 327 months. The judge ultimately sentenced him to 240 months.
So I wanted to explore for just a minute the Category 2 criminal history point, because if I understand your argument, it isn't that it was technically wrong under the guidelines to do that. It's just that at the later stage, once one is looking at 3553A and so forth, it's your position that that overstates his prior criminal record?
Yes, that is our position. Category 2 seriously overstates his prior criminal and past conduct. He had 8 prior driving on a suspended license. 2, he received a sentence of 40 days to run concurrent. They're minor misdemeanor traffic convictions. It is our position that that is all he had in his background. He did have one juvenile that was taken into consideration under relevant conduct. And I believe he had another juvenile from when he was 12 years old.
So what would the guidelines difference have been if he stayed in one?
I believe he would have been at 108 months. I'm not 100% sure of the calculation, but it would have been significantly lower.
Well, I'm looking at the chart. What was his criminal history? What was his category? Do you remember that?
He was placed into a Category 2. Otherwise,
no,
he would...
On the offense level is what I mean to say. I'm sorry.
His offense level?
Yeah.
His offense level was... His base offense level was 36, but ultimately, because of the obstruction of justice enhancement, he was put at a 40.
Okay, so I'm just looking, on the chart, a 40 at criminal history 2 is 324 to 405, whereas 1 is 262 to 327. And he winds up, as you said, with 240 months. So he's below either one of them.
He is below, however, it still greatly represents his criminal past. He only had minor misdemeanor traffic violations. Per application note 3 of section 4A1.3, a downward departure from the defendant's criminal history category may be warranted if, for example, the defendant had 2 minor misdemeanor convictions close to 10 years prior to the instant offense.
I understand that, but I'm just saying you can't do better than be in a 1, right? And the sentence, given his offense, given the various adjustments to the offense level, his sentence would have still been at the low end of a criminal history category 1 offense level 38.
The low
end is 235.
We do have other issues, and that one of the issues is the obstruction issue.
Sure. Except the interesting thing about the obstruction issue to me is the fact that he did get his acceptance of responsibility. It seemed like the judge was aware that there was some complexity with this. And honestly, skipping out for 5 years and change, even if you think you have a good reason, I can't find in the guidelines anything that says that's not obstruction.
Well, Judge, he wasn't afraid to go to prison. He wasn't afraid of his incarceration, and he noted that to his probation officer. He was afraid of what was going to happen to him once he got there by his co-defendants. He was under threat, and he was under duress.
Unfortunately, prisons are dangerous places, and I'm just not aware of a legal doctrine that says you get to take that decision into your own hands instead of alerting the court to the fact that you're afraid or your attorney to, you know, trigger whatever protective mechanisms our system can come up with.
Right. What we're talking about here is Section 3C1.1 of the Sentencing Guidelines Application Note, and that is willfully failing to appear for judicial proceeding constitute conduct for which the enhancement would normally apply. The note goes on to define willful, and I think that's the issue here, and Mr. Martinez's ultimate voluntariness of why he did not appear. It's defined as, for purposes of applying the upward adjustment for obstruction, as when the defendant knew he was required to appear and voluntarily and intentionally failed to appear.
And why, after 5 years, can't we draw the inference that that describes Mr. Martinez to a T? It's not like he left for a few months and then came back after he assured himself that things were safe.
Well, Mr. Martinez isn't the normal defendant. He was low borderline intelligence, and that goes to our final issue of the 3553 factors, A1 in particular, and A6. He received a pre-sentencing evaluation that was ordered by the judge and requested by the defense. He went through forensic testing, and the forensic psychologist who tested him found that he had a 62 on a performance IQ test and a 50-something on a verbal IQ test. Both fell below one percentile in intelligence. That is a factor that was not considered at all by the district court judge. His inability to make decisions, his lack of intelligence, his near mental retardation. The doctor even went on to say that he met the first two prongs of mental retardation, meaning the low IQ, and it's arguable that possibly the lack of ability to communicate, yet for the fact he had self-care, he was able to take care of himself, so he was not going to give him a diagnosis of mental retardation.
Now, you don't emphasize that point in your brief.
Yeah, I don't remember these capacity arguments being
the intelligence
emphasized.
Arguments were
right.
Brought up. But as far as how far into the capacity and his near mental retardation, it wasn't touched. But the judge did talk about how he was young. She considered that factor, but she did not even touch on his intelligence. When looking at the report, he's nearly mentally retarded. So his decision to flee out of fear and panic and his inability to make decisions needed to be looked at.
Did she mention in her sentencing the fear because of gang members that threatened him?
I believe she did, and she agreed that that was most likely a real threat, a real fear. And I don't think the government was saying that that wasn't. The government was upset that they weren't informed about it or something. But he did tell his probation officer. And the fact that he said to his probation officer, I'm not worried about adjusting to incarceration. It's about my co-defendants when I get there. He wasn't fleeing because he was trying to get out of his sentence and not pay his time. He was fleeing because he was afraid for his life. That, coupled with his mental disability, he was on Social Security at one point for mental disability. He is not, 240 months is just too much.
Well, but that assumes he would assume he'd be safer in prison than he would be on the street.
Well, I don't really go for that argument. I mean, this is a kid who's was an eighth grade dropout, is nearly mentally retarded. His father either committed suicide, it's in the pre-sentencing, or killed himself or was murdered by a gang. His older brother is a leader in the gang. He was brought into the gang in his early teenage years. The only thing in his background is driving on a suspended license. That's it. The government goes on at sentencing that he got up every day and committed crime because he was driving on a suspended license. We don't know that. He lived in the ghetto. We don't know if he took the CTA. He did get picked up. There's no underlying DUI. For him, he could have had a driving on a suspended license because he didn't pay fines, or he didn't report an accident, or he didn't pay his child support. His first real crime is the crime he pled guilty for, and 240 months is just too severe. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Logg.
Hey, please the court. My name is Raj Lott, and I represent the government. I just want to start by clearing up the base of the total offense level after you incorporate the acceptance, which he did receive, and the obstruction of justice. I believe his total offense level was 37.
37.
Yeah. And so Your Honor is correct to observe that.
So it would have been, we'd move over to the criminal history column number one at the offense level 37.
Correct. But I also want to make clear that the criminal history category of two doesn't overstate his criminal history. There's no contention that it was improperly calculated, and the guidelines, in fact, do have a way of dealing with traffic offenses, more minor offenses, and they look to the sentence imposed to determine whether they'll receive any points. And it goes to the 3553A factors here because it does speak to his disregard for the law to have so many offenses. So I don't think the Category 2 overstates it, and I don't think that the district court abused its discretion by refusing to depart downward from the criminal history calculation. On the obstruction of justice argument, I just would like to point to this court's decision in Curb, which does hold that even if you're motivated by fear, if you make the choice not to appear for a court proceeding, that can warrant the obstruction of justice enhancement.
So to what extent, as we assess choice, do we take his capacity into account? Because it sounds like in that context the capacity argument was raised. It doesn't seem to have really been developed as a standalone point.
I think the capacity argument was raised, it's on page 18 of the transcript, in the context the defendant's attorney said, given his background, the difficult struggles he had early in his life, and was just born with a judge, with his ability to have a hard time understanding what's going on and strive in school, and so on. So it wasn't very well developed. Here, I think he made a choice that he was afraid of retribution, and that rather than reporting those threats to the government and rather than show up to serve his sentence, he would flee.
Right. No, and clearly, you know, if it were you, I wouldn't have any problem understanding this was an actual choice. If it were a three-year-old, I don't really put much stock in choices that three-year-olds make because they're not considered choices. So maybe he's somewhere in between, you know, the three-year-old and you, and I have to understand whether he actually chose to do this.
I understand your concern, Your Honor, and I just don't think the argument was developed in that context as him not having the capacity to make the choice. I mean, he was found, competent to be a part of the proceedings, which presupposes an ability to make several decisions about how, you know, to whether or not to plead guilty, how to prepare for your defense. So I don't think.
Was there actual time spent on that question, or was that kind of the perfunctory Rule 11? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Well, there was a competency evaluation performed, and he was found competent. So that was adjudicated. I have not reviewed the transcript of that hearing, so I don't know. Yes.
But at the time of sentencing, was reference made back to the psychological testing and evaluation that was conducted to develop an argument on his intellectual functioning?
No, that argument wasn't developed at sentencing, except for a reference to his background more generally, in the fact that he was young, impressionable, and somewhat under the sway of his older brother.
Okay.
And the court did respond to that in considering the sentence. When the court said, "I understand he was very young at the time of this offense, but you know, found the nature of the conduct and the decision to flee rather than face sentencing significant." If the court has no further questions, I would just ask that for these reasons and the reasons stated in our brief that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Ms. Meehan?
It was brought up in sentencing by the defense attorney about the forensic report and that he had trouble processing information, was not intellectually capable. It was brought up throughout. A specific capacity argument was not brought up. But I just want you to know it is in the transcript.
Well, in the nature of a discussion about how he did poorly in school, or was there specific reference made to his IQ?
There was specific reference made to the report, to the doctor's finding that he was low borderline. low borderline intelligence was his range. He did not get a mental retardation diagnosis. He missed it by one prong, but he was low borderline. And in the report, it says less than one percentile. Yeah.
What was this a competency stand trial?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't competency, but I believe that factor, that 35531 factor, the judge did not even discuss his intelligence level at all. She did not even bring that factor up, and it was brought up by the defense.
I thought the government lawyer just said that there was, at the outset, an investigation of his competency to stand trial.
There was. There may have been, yes. So I have nothing further. I want to just clarify that. Thank you.
And you took the case, or your firm took the case by appointment. We thank you for your representation of your client. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow.